There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it.
There you go.
With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. This is podcast number 1106, August 4th, 2025. Steven.
This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads provide you, the F1Weekly.com web surfer, with ads that interest you. From tickets to the Canadian Grand Prix to ringtones for your cell phone, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Yahoo Ads. Wow! Norris wins with a one-stopper. Fernando on fire in Budapest. The emotional opera at Ferrari gets better and better. And Max says Red Bull will not win another race this season. And yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know, you want to. Wow. What an emotional weekend, especially if you're a Ferrari fan. The McLaren 1-2s continue, and this is going to be the way it's going to be for the rest of the season. It will be McLaren domination, giving a few teams hope, but it's always yanked away thinking that they're going to win. But wow, what an emotional weekend for Ferrari. It's literally become an opera. Somebody like Puccini is going to have to write something about this, but qualifying, the excitement of qualifying, to have the agony and the ecstasy right there in front of you with Leclerc grabbing pole. Look at Fernando, P5, Bertolotto, P7. Everybody was performing except the usual suspects, but Lewis Hamilton. And boy, that post-qualifying Lewis Hamilton interview was brutal. I had people call me and tell me that they almost cried. It was so sad. So, it was pretty brutal. I'm useless. It's time to replace me with another driver. I don't know. While Fernando, who's 44, and this is his 22nd season, half of his life on the Formula One grid, is still at the top of his game. And now that the car is picking up a little pace, oh yes, 2026 will be exciting. But boy, I'm telling you, that pole position by Leclerc just devastated Hamilton and then gave Leclerc the delusions of grandeur, believing up against, obviously, the fastest cars on the grid, the McLarens, that he had a chance of winning this race. And it's possible. With strategy, a safety car would have helped. But you could see it. So first we had Lewis Hamilton meltdown. And then during the Grand Prix, especially the last 10 laps, the last 15 laps, Leclerc preaching to his team that if they just listened to him, let him handle the issues, he would have done it differently. It's very fascinating stuff. It's very emotional. There's a lot of drama involved. And so today's Leclerc emotional outburst, because they just couldn't keep it up after Lewis Hamilton's crying breakdown about his uselessness for the team, truly Ferrari have stuff they need to take care of before 2026, when we have a whole new package and a whole new set of problems and issues. But really, unbelievable. The Grand Prix was pretty laissez-faire. I mean, Fernando had a great race, very in control. Stroll, not too bad. And Max, oh my God, the misery. The misery, especially for Max, but not too much complaining, except that the car is incapable of doing anything. But there was some good stuff. There was a little bit of passing. Hülkenberg got a penalty, and I honestly looked at that a few times. I did not see it, but if the sensors say he's done it, he's done it. It's simple. There is no argument. But what a great Grand Prix to end, is a good way to end, because I think Piastri really thought he was going to win this Grand Prix. Norris, who didn't think he was going to win, but this time he came in a bit strong-headed, together. Maybe he did a little meditation, but he deserved the win today, so it was very interesting. And I just felt so bad when Russell passed poor Leclerc, who is obviously an emotional wreck after this Grand Prix. I can't imagine how he winds down after a Grand Prix like this. But nevertheless, Ferrari have a lot of work to do, but they are quick. They showed some pace. They just can't. It's the Pirellis, folks. Trust me, it's the Pirellis. So, very exciting. And once again, congratulations to Zach Brown, doing an outstanding job in managing his drivers, going against the grain and just letting him fight till the end. We'll see how far this goes. But and it shows. You could see Norris sometimes, you know, not brake as late as he wants to because he's trying to stay out of trouble. Doesn't want to hit Piastri. He wants to keep everything copacetic. And I think he's doing the right thing. I think he's got the right attitude. Nice guys do finish last, but I think Norris is picking up the pace. It's looking good. It's going to be competitive. We only have 9 points between them. And I think for Max, being completely out of it, it's relaxing. He is not going to have the emotional baggage that Leclerc is going to be carrying to the office tomorrow morning. But boy, I mean, Ferrari needs some meetings. And LCH needs to get a grip. He needs to talk to Fernando. There are going to be some lean years. You cannot just dominate no matter where you go. And I think Fernando really, maybe he should have read more Ferrari history. I think he was just overconfident. He didn't analyze how lucky he was getting in the Mercedes in 2014, right at the beginning of full domination. Ferrari still has a long way to go. And not only that, but this is their last season with this package. We start all over again. So Lewis, if he's midfield next year, he's going to have a nervous breakdown. I'm just saying. So that was exciting to watch. The opera at Ferrari. I'm telling you, the Italian press are going to be on this for the next 3 weeks. Pounding. And maybe we, now that we have an American Pope, let's get this guy involved. They need all the help they can get. Also, we have a new Formula 3 champion, which is absolutely wonderful. The young man's name is Rafael Camara, and he's with the Ferrari Junior program. So congratulations to Rafael, Formula 3 champion for 2025. So outstanding, outstanding stuff. So let's go to the Nasser Hamid Corner. And this week, it just continues to get better and better and better. We've got Mika Hakkinen from Laguna Seca 2019. And a lot of other goodies. I let it roll sometimes. Nasser's doing so good. There's just no way I'm going to waste this fine conversation. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. another fantastic Grand Prix. Enjoy what Nasser has to bring. And don't forget, Nass, I think about you every day.
Hi, I'm Pato O'Ward, and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you, sir. I am doing very good. It was good to see you again at Laguna Seca. You are definitely getting younger and charmer year after year. Did you enjoy the festivities there, sir?
Absolutely, Nass. And of course, it was wonderful seeing you again. We haven't seen each other since 1988. So it was great. We had a good time. Of course, Laguna Seca is always a great track to visit.
Yes, a great environment, great place, and great event. And, you know, my big thanks to Miss Rachel of McLaren for the opportunity to meet the young man I met in 1991 in the dry heat of Phoenix, Arizona. We are very pleased to bring our 15 minutes of fame with two-time world champion from Finlandia, Mr. Mika Häkkinen. Mika made his Grand Prix debut here in the United States with Lotus in 1991. And I was in Phoenix, and on Friday night, I ran into him standing by himself in a hotel lobby. And after winning back-to-back Formula One championships, I think he's lonely no more. Here is a conversation which starts with him talking about racing at Suzuka, a race that he was taking part this weekend in the Japanese GT Series. So please enjoy our chat with Mika Häkkinen.
Power, grip, downforce. Very nicely balanced. It's very nice car to drive. Only enemy is the heat. It's gonna be really hot. I think it's gonna be like something like 90.
How about Heikki Kovalainen? Will he be the enemy also, or is he driving with you?
He's gonna race there. I think he's got. Yeah, he's going to be in the same race with me. And I think he's driving Ferrari. But of course, the McLaren is better than Ferrari.
And Suzuka has been very kind to you.
Yeah, I've been having a super success there in the past. Raced there first time in 91 with Team Lotus. I did win a world championship twice in Suzuka. So there's some mega memories. Of course, I know the circuit like my own pockets. You know, every curb, every corner. Winning a two-time world championship in that place, and the crazy thing was those years 98 and 99 when this happened. The champions were decided in the last Grand Prix, and that was Suzuka. So my personal preparation for that Grand Prix was just super maximum. So I studied the track very well to understand how I can get best out of the track to suit my car and to find the best possible racing line. So I know the place. It's nice to go back there to this kind of race because I don't need to learn the track. And also because the car is so good, so I don't need to start modifying the car to suit my driving style. He's already good.
Now, I'm very happy to tell you, when you won your two championships at Suzuka, I was living in California, and I watched the races at like 1 in the morning. Oh. So very, very happy to see you so early.
Oh, success. That's so cool. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And I understood that way you were in my first Grand Prix.
1991.
Yeah, first in Phoenix, and that's so cool. Sorry, I didn't remember you straight away, but it's quite a long time ago, man.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
And you've met a lot more beautiful people than me that you want to remember.
I think you had a little bit longer hair when I met you there.
Yeah, and they were black too. You know what happened? I was in the hotel lobby Friday night, and a very young kid looking very Nordic came next to me wearing a Hitachi jacket. Oh, and wow. I said, hey, are you Mika Häkkinen? And you said yes.
Oh, yes, indeed. That's a That's a long time ago. Yeah. It was quite an interesting Grand Prix, the Phoenix, yeah. Because the, when I did my first Grand Prix, of course, excited, young guy. The Lotus car, Formula One car that I was racing there was about 50 kilos overweight. So that means 10 kilos, let's say 10 kilos in Phoenix racetrack that time, the 10 kilos extra meant minimum, I would say, 2/10 of the second. So you can imagine that the racing against my competitors and me carrying 50 kilo extra all the time. It was impossible to get the best performance. But nevertheless, it was a good free practice, good qualification. I think I qualified in 13th or 14th. So it was pretty good result considering the car. And when I did start the race, first thing what happened, no, I think it was just 10 laps behind. I went the main straight flat out and my steering came off. The steering came off the car.
And, it's a Lotus.
And the very first Grand Prix, so matching the driving Formula One car on the street circuit, that steering comes off. So of course I put the clutch down, I slammed the brakes, I was sliding all over the place, clipped the barrier a little bit, but not so hard that way it would damage the car. So I was able to put the steering back on, and I called the radio to the pits. That way I had a problem. You know, steering came off, so there must be a problem. So I couldn't come to pits. So I came to pits, they changed the tires because they were flat spotted, and they came with a new steering. And this steering wheel was belonging to my teammate, Johnny Herbert. And the buttons were different place. So every time when I was going to right-hand corners, my thumb was touching the drink button. So I was spraying all the time water on the right-hand corners in my mouth. So I nearly drowned. So I was like, luckily I ran out of water. So I continued racing flat out. And I never done race distance in my life in Formula One, so that was the first time. So I thought the race never gonna end. So race was continuing. I was getting exhausted, and then I was looking main straight again. I was looking at the mirrors, and I was looking like sun is going down already. So the race is so long, the sun going down, but it was not going down. The car was on fire.
Oh.
So there was a flames coming behind the car. It was on fire. So of course. I stopped the car and was burning flat out. I was like, wow, this is a great first experience of what is Grand Prix racing all about. So we had some work to do.
Now, one of your Lotus F1 cars was stolen. Was it ever recovered?
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah, one of your Formula One Lotus cars was stolen. This is news to you?
That's new stuff. I don't remember that though.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Do you remember at all where it did happen?
What?
Do you remember where this happened?
I think it was from England, from some place in England.
Well, whoever stole the car, I think you cannot.
He's not driving in historic races.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think this person is able to put it in the racetrack.
Okay, I want to ask you something I read about the 19. I think it was the 1991. May have been a different one. Was there a big brawl between Peter Collins and Guy Edwards when you were at Monza, when you were with them, or was it a different year?
Peter Collins and Guy Edwards,
the sponsor guy.
Yeah. I mean, Guy Edwards was a sponsor hunter. Very nice guy. I liked him a lot. I never had a problem with him, neither with Peter Collins. And you know what, I'm not the, you know, if the people have problems with other people, I don't get involved. So I didn't really know if they had some issues or something. It's not my problem.
Now, this next question should bring a big smile on your face. What happened at Spa in 2000 between you and Michael? Did that make up for what happened between the two of you in Macau in 1990?
Oh yeah, the Macau, of course. That was a really sad race. Really sad race. There was a great prize money from that race if you win that race, and it was a crazy type of race weekend, because on Sunday there was two races, and they calculated from those two races, they calculated the points, and that gives you the overall result for the race. And so I won the first heat, and Michael, I think, was 2 to 3 seconds behind. So for the second start, the Michael Schumacher, he was able to overtake me after a few laps. So only what I needed to do is to stay just behind him.
Yeah.
But I think it was the last lap when he made a quite a massive mistake, driving error, which gave me the opportunity to overtake him on a straight line. And the mistake what he did was so big that way I cannot stay behind. I have to overtake him. But when I did try to overtake him, he looked in his mirror, and just when I tried to overtake him, he turned the steering and I crashed him in the rear tire. So my race was over. So of course I was disappointed. Team was disappointed. Lost a good prize money. So then Formula One. You know, then we had some serious races together, me and Michael. And indeed, in Spa we had a great race together. That Michael was leading the Grand Prix. Nearly. Last couple of laps he was still leading Grand Prix and I was second, and I got a great opportunity to overtake him. Even he was pushing me on the grass a couple of times when we were going like 200 miles per hour. So I had quite a spectacular overtaking maneuver against him when a driver called Ricardo Zonda was driving middle of the track on the straight line. And Michael decided to overtake him in the left, and I overtook it for the right. So it was a very spectacular situation in a Grand Prix racing.
Now, you know what Zonta said to his team when you guys passed him?
Oh, I don't know, actually.
He said, these guys are crazy.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. It was he definitely needed to change his underpants after.
Yeah. Now, I have a question. Did you say anything to Michael or Willy Weber after Macau? And did Michael say anything to you after Spa?
Yeah, I mean, I had a discussion with Michael quite often. Spa, of course, I had a discussion with him because he was absolutely far too aggressive against me at the race in that race, because I was so much quicker. So it was really, really not good to him to... Not good him to create that kind of danger situations. And Macau, I don't think I went to see him. I don't think he came to see me. He just thought, he had a feeling like this was a racing incident. Mika drive me in a rear tire, and that's it. So I think this is long time ago. But anyway, so he never did come to say anything. So he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, of all your Grand Prix wins, which ones are the most memorable and dear to you?
Well, I think the Spa Grand Prix definitely was an incredible memory. But what comes steps out mostly is the winning, of course, the World Championship in Suzuka and the Monaco Grand Prix. So those races are something that really is emotionally very good feeling, you know, because it was a really amazing victory. It's like Monaco winning there was just mega feeling, you know. It's such a great track, difficult track indeed to race. And I knew that there was always a discussion inside in the team and Formula One in general, that way the driver who can win the Monaco Grand Prix is definitely a potential winner of the World Championship.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of confidence winning the Monaco.
How important was the role of John Hogan of Marlboro and Keke Rosberg in making you a championship winning driver?
Yeah, I mean, John Hogan, yeah, I know him. I know him today. John Hogan, he's such a brilliant guy. Great businessman, in my opinion. Supporting extreme. He really didn't show the emotion too much. He was really tough businessman. But I knew he did like me. You know, I was not a political guy. I was doing my job. And yeah, he liked me. We had a good relation. And of course, Keke was important in my racing career, managing me, giving me advices, become a professional racing driver. Because when you're in Formula One, you need to be super professional. And what that means? It means the driving part is actually a very small part of your racing career. It's all about traveling, managing yourself, doing marketing work, communicating with the media, with the partners, taking care of your fitness. So such a huge life change arrived when I joined the Formula One. So I think it was very important advisor for me to learn. Even I didn't learn so quickly, but I did learn eventually.
Now, I have another of Mika Hakkinen favorite moment. You out-qualified Senna in your first race with McLaren, and when he asked you how you did that, you said, big balls.
That is correct, you know. It was a... My intention was to really... Well, I shot with my hand like this. So my intention was not to be negative or underestimate Ayrton's great performance and great talent and great professionalism. It was purely just to make a little joke, because me being faster than him, for me it was normal, obvious. But for him, not. For him, it was a big shock. And of course, Ayrton was so much aware of the reaction of the media, how they're going to attack him. From the eyes of the team members, it was unpleasant for Ayrton, because everybody always respect him to be faster than anybody, any other driver. Suddenly comes this young Finnish guy and kick his ass.
My time is up. I thank you so much. I have one request. Can you just say hi? I'm Mika Hakkinen, yeah. And you're listening to F1 Weekly in English.
F1 Weekly
in English and Finnish. We have listeners in Finlandia also.
Hi, this is Mika Hakkinen, double Formula One world champion. All the best for the readers, F1 Weekly.
And also in Finnish.
Morjesta, täällä on Mika Hakkinen, kaksinkertainen maailmanmestari Formula Ykkösissä. Ja toivotan teille hyviä lukuhetkiä F1 Weekly.
Muchas gracias.
Mika, keep up the good work. The check is in the mail. NAS, congratulatory remarks are in order. And now... we need to move on to what people love about F1 Weekly.
Yes, sir. But, you know, just one thing I would say as far as the Monterey Rolex reunion, previously known as Monterey Historics, is American version of Goodwood Festival of Speed, immensely popular with historic racing fans and very well attended, and located in one of the best areas of California. And, you know, surprisingly, I was flying out on Monday, and in the waiting area of the terminals of the San Jose Airport, I was surprised how many people had come in from different parts of the country to attend this. So it is good to see it going strong still.
It is good. That's great news. And it is going strong. Of course, this year we celebrated 50 years of IMSA, and they had quite a few IMSA cars out there. And we were blessed to see Zach Brown in the Lancia prototype. So pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, he owns quite a few historic cars. In fact, Mika was driving the McLaren Can-Am car. Mark Webber was there, and I saw Mr. Jean Todt was also at the event.
Yeah, so if the host of F1 Weekly and Jean Todt are at the event, you know it's a pretty good event.
Absolutely, and of course... cherry on top is Mr. Clark Rogers being there with his Citroën Traction Avant.
Exactly. And that's what I always drive on the weekends.
And many thanks for showing me that secret parking spot so close to the track.
I am brilliant at times, but this is how I roll. I have my secret spot at Monza, Indianapolis, Laguna Seca, and Sonoma.
What about Bristol, Tennessee?
I try not to mention that secret spot.
Okay. Okay, so now moving on to Formula One, the big talk of summer break is, will Bottas get the boot at Mercedes, and will Grosjean at Haas F1 get chop-chop like romaine lettuce? What say you?
Apparently not. All the rumors that are spinning out there from the pundits are saying Bottas will continue making Lewis Hamilton salads in the morning and dinner in the evening, and Ocon will be lent to Renault because I think Renault doesn't want to be part of Hülkenberg's record of 170 Grand Prix starts and no podium.
Well, you know, this German website, autobild.de, is reporting that Esteban Ocon will be loaned by Mercedes to Renault for the next two seasons. This would mean LCH will have Barrichello and Bottas as teammate next season. Loyal, obedient, and fast, but not threatening. And I think this would be a very good move because, you know, Ocon is a young, what you call, whippersnapper. Yeah. He might do to LCH what he did to Max in Interlagos, if you know what I'm talking about. And Toto will not have that problem with Bottas. Bottas is a solid Rubinho. He will win a race or two. And he is going to bring in a lot of points, something that cannot be said for a lot of other number two. So I think this would be a good move for all parties involved. But if this happens, the only thing standing between LCH and its 7th and 8th championships will be Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen. As long as Red Bull has Adrian Newey, I think they will have a competitive car. And if Honda continues to pump up the volume with Max at the wheel, it is only a matter of time before they put the needle on the record and the drumbeat from Christian Horner goes like this: Max, you are youngest world champion, baby.
Yeah, and when that happens, Lewis will be on his couch, retired and smoking a cigar.
In Compton or El Segundo?
El Segundo.
Okay. Now, Ocon, it will be a great opportunity for him to go against an established Grand Prix race winner if he goes to Renault, of course, and he would be racing against a driver who could run with Max, and he will find out that will not be an easy punching bag like Sergio Perez. What say you?
I agree. I mean, it's not going to be laughs, but Ocon needs, and I think it's a good move to send him to a French team. That way he can relate.
Speak the language, so to say.
Si, bravo.
So if this thing works out, Bottas stays, Ocon goes to Renault, then the question is, what about Nico Hülkenberg? Here are the options. At Haas F1, I think they need a change. K-Mag's BFF, Nico Hülkenberg, will be a good charger with experience. There is talk of Pietro Fittipaldi. I think they need to keep it real. But we know in Formula One these days, money screams louder than the wonderful hybrid engines we have. Do you see Nico going there, sir?
Yes, I do.
You think it'll be a good move for both parties?
I do. Nico's not the kind of nut job that Grosjean is, banging wheels with a teammate, you know. He's the consummate professional.
And you know, the fact that he can run with Ricciardo confirms my faith that this is a very good racing talent. Despite, you know, we can joke about 170 races and no podiums, but as we have said many times at F1 Weekly and can be confirmed at ups.com, no package, no delivery.
Exactly. And sometimes people get lucky, if you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, tell me more.
And see, some people don't get so lucky, you know. Doesn't mean he's a bad driver. It just means, you know, Lady Luck is a tramp.
Yes. Okay, the other option is at Williams, the team where he scored his first and only pole position so far. And, you know, what I feel bad about is that, like Stoffel Vandoorne, Nico won each and every championship they entered many times in first attempt. And so did another driver. It starts with L, meaning lucky, Lewis Carl Hamilton. But once they reached Formula One, it was a very different story. And, you know, there lies the, you know, look at Jean Alesi, you know, one Grand Prix win with all that talent. So luck and package plays a big, big part. Now, George Russell has been impressive in his rookie season. He is also a Mercedes young driver, but Claire Williams has stated that they want him to stay for the duration of his contract, which I believe is 3 years. Who do you think they will have as his teammate next year? Who would you like to see realistically?
I don't know. You know, I mean, it's not like anybody cares what's going on at Williams. I like George Russell, but we know it's not going to be a Polish driver.
Yeah, you know, that was a feel-good story that really has not worked out. And I just had a feeling, you know, before the season started, that if the comeback did not work for the great Michael Schumacher, and he was out of F1 racing, much less than Kubica, and Kubica unfortunately had his very serious accident, I just did not think that he was going to make it successfully. Now, keep in mind, he had also tested with Renault extensively. And if a factory team is not taking you on board, obviously there is a reason. But, you know, let's see who they bring in. You know, their record has been, you know, like they have these guys on the side of the road will work for food. I think Claire Williams can be seen on the side of M1 in UK with a sign saying, "We'll hire if you have money." So on that point, I think Nicholas Latifi, who is like in his fourth or fifth season of Formula One and whose Papito is now a shareholder in McLaren, and he's doing a very good job in GP2 this year. I will not be surprised if he makes his Grand Prix debut. And then we have two Canadian Trustafarians in Formula One. Wouldn't that be nice, eh?
That would be so exciting.
You know, Clark, talking about young drivers, as you know, at F1 Weekly, we look at young talent, try to interview as many as we can. I have to tell you, do you remember, I think it was about 12, 13 years ago, when both John Dennis and Flavio Briatore made a comment that they did not see any great talent in GP2. I'm looking at the scene right now, both in Formula 2, which was previously known as Hapidos, and Formula 3, which is previously known as GP3. I mean, there are several talented drivers, but I really do not see the next Lewis or a Max, because of all these talents, and there are some very good drivers. Mick Schumacher, you know, completely dominated the second half of the F3 championship last year. He just won his first race, is nowhere near in the top five in the championship. There are many others, Marcus Armstrong, Yuri Vips, Robert Schwartzman. These kids, I was expecting them to win a championship last year in their rookie season. And now when they are in second season in respective series, and they are not burning down the house with hot performance. So, doesn't take much for the next Uber talent to pop up from nowhere, and we'll see what happens. Okay, next we come to the Willie Horton revolving door at Toro Rosso. I think Gasly is going to the guillotine if he cannot destroy the torpedo. I think one of them will bite the dust in the sands of Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. The Red Bull pipeline is not exactly gushing out talent they can bring to Formula One immediately, but that has never stopped them. Daniel Tictum has been thrown out of the program while in Japanese Super Formula. They have now taken on Indy Lights champion Pato Ward as Tictum's replacement in Japan. He has done a few races and one race in F2, and again, he's nowhere near what Dr. Marco was expecting, which is, you know, winner comes close second. But those are their standards. I think it will be serious harakiri if they put him in Formula One in 2020. In the immortal words of Jaime Alguersuari, going to F1 without any testing is like going to the slaughterhouse. Your thoughts on the Toro Rosso trials and tribulations?
Well, you know, Toro Rosso is famous for the chop chop. You know, the machete isn't part of their crest for no reason at all. I mean, that's what they do over there, and we've seen them come, we've seen them go. Vitantonio Luizzi, Scott Speed, Jaime Alguersuari, ex-Formula One driver, great DJ in the Andalusian area of España.
Yes, he is putting the needle on the record, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's the way it goes sometimes. Actually, quite a few F1 drivers do DJ works. I know there was one IndyCar racer who did very well here. He's now a DJ in Brazil. And I think Kamui Kobayashi, or one of the Japanese drivers who raced in Formula One, he's also spun some records.
And you want to hear something really hilarious?
Tell me.
I think Desiree is now a DJ in Honolulu, and Steve Faub is a DJ in Portland, Oregon.
Well, we wish them all the best. And what is David Tapia doing, our executive producer?
He's at Comic-Con permanently.
As a DJ?
Exactly.
Great, great. So, sir, here is your favorite question. Who's going to win at Spa?
Let me see. Could be Max, but maybe not.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you because I've been thinking, you know, me and a lot of people around the world have, and of course the team itself, waiting for a Grand Prix win by Ferrari. And now there's all the talk, they have top straight line speed, and they're going to be very favorites at the Spa-Francorchamps with Seb and Charles. And I think at the end of the race, regardless of how wonderful they go, I will not be surprised if the scenery at the checkered flag is a silver bullet. Or Max winning there would be awesome. And you know, his mother is Belgian, so that's, he's half Belgian anyway. So that will be fantastic, sort of a popular win. If Max Verstappen can win the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps in a Red Bull Honda. Wow.
You know what I find fascinating? Is the same people who talk about Ferrari straight line speed are the ones that were talking about Ferrari straight line speed in winter practice.
Well, the speed is there in the speed line. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it.
There's no doubt, but when you take a break and go into the cafeteria at Ferrari, they're still serving the same old, same old.
You mean Chunky Monkey ice cream?
Exactly.
Or did Kimi take that stock?
Yeah, it's over at Alpha now.
Yeah, he should be sponsored by, you know, Ben and Jerry or some ice cream company. That will be a very popular promotion. You know, talking of Kimi, his son, Robin Raikkonen, recently did some laps in a go-kart. I think he's 4 years old. Kimi Raikkonen posted, I think, on his Instagram, the ace man has arrived. So it will be just a few years before we see him racing in go-karts all over Europe. And I'm looking forward to it.
Does Fernando have a son?
Not that I know of.
Well, there you go. No competition.
Oh, same old story, huh? No competition.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Anything else you're expecting in the second half of the season, or will it be a rinse and repeat of the first half?
It's race and repeat, and then build another trophy bar.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I have never lost any sleep over anybody's success. And whether Lewis can match Schumacher's numbers, you know, time will tell. But of course, he is very, very close now. And with so many races remaining just this year, he's going to pick up another 3 or 4 wins, I think. So next season is going to be a tremendous season. And I think the Mercedes, well, that Uber domination is over, but domination continues. It will be a fascinating season if we can pass his numbers. And again, this is not my wish. It's just like we are in such incredible times in racing. I never thought a teenager would win a Formula One race. It has happened. I remember, Clark, 1973, when Jackie Stewart retired. Shortly after his retirement, he was interviewed on BBC World Service. And I'll never forget the reference he made. This is in 73, when there were only 3 or 4 races outside Europe. He said motor racing has become very popular, and right now they are planning on going to different places. And his next sentence was, maybe one day we'll have a Grand Prix in Timbuktu or Saudi Arabia. And, you know, Saudi Arabia may happen in a year or two. And the Mali Grand Prix can only happen if they discover big oil fields there, because Chase Carey loves to go to a destination city, and what could be more bigger destination than Timbuktu? I think if they discover a lot of oil in Tombstone, Arizona, that will be a destination city too.
I agree. Keep up the good work, Nas.
Okay, sir. Shall we take a Nahrain Karthikeyan Gatorade flavor break and come back?
We'll be back after this brief cucumber.
Hi, I'm David Coulthard, otherwise known as DC, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the Karachi Kid himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir, and MotoGP at Silverstone. Man, what a great run on the last corner of the last lap to the finish line. Marc Marquez was the man of the race, as he had been throughout the season and past several seasons, I must say. He and the watching world had a surprise for him as he headed to the checkered flag. Second place man Alex Rins on a Suzuki stunned the Honda man to take an unbelievable win. I say, check it out, man. It's a doozy. Sadly, championship challenger Andrea Dovizioso crashed out early in the race with Fabio Quartararo. Very, very exciting race, I must say. Now we go to IndyCars. Sato San got a lot of flack for his involvement in the crash at Pocono, but last Saturday night, he won the oval race at Gateway Raceway in St. Louis. Ed Carpenter was a very, very close second, a very impressive finish there also. And sir, our congratulations and kudos to young Franco-Argentine driver Sascha Fenestras. He has clinched the Japanese Formula 3 championship, so which is very good for him. Last year, he raced in the European Formula 3. And prior to that, he was Formula Renault Eurocup champion. Our friend, Mr. Inam Ahmed, is currently third in the Japanese championship. And there is one more round to go, and we will get an update when it happens soon. Okay, sir, a quick look at the championships in some major racing series, top three. Formula 1, your favorite driver, Lewis Hamilton, leading over Valtteri Bottas, Max Verstappen third. Absolutely amazing. Formula 2, Dutch driver Nyck de Vries is the leader. Second is Nicholas Latifi from Canada. Third is Brazilian Sergio Sete Camara. Formula 3, top three is very interesting, very international. Leading is Robert Schwartzman from Russia. He's in the Ferrari development program. Second is Yuri Vips from Estonia. He was recently signed to the Red Bull program and doing very good. And Jahan Daruvala, he is in his third year in the series. He is third in the championship. And at one time, he was part of Force India. But I don't think he's part of the... I guess nobody's part of Racing Point apart from Lance Stroll. But that's another story. Okay, in MotoGP, we have Marc Marquez leading the championship. Andrea Dovizioso is second. And Alex Rins third. Sir, would you have any update from your favorite series, NASCAR?
No updates from NASCAR, but some people are getting really pissed off in the truck series.
Okay. Why am I not surprised, by the way? Okay, sir, talking of the machete and chop-chop style of Dr. Marco, we come to look back on the victims of Dr. Strange Love. May I proceed with your express written consent, sir?
Let me get Pedro to text you.
Oh, there it is. With a CC to Mark Coughlin, right? Okay, sir. I move forward now. Red Bull gives you wings. Indeed, they do. For the few very lucky ones, they are wings of eagles. But for the vast majority, they are wings of turkey, where they do nothing but gobble in Grand Prix racing for a season or two. The wings are plucked without any warning by the machete of Dr. Marco. Today we will look at some of his victims. We shall start with man from California, with whom we could not meet him, but we did meet his mom and grandma, Clark Rogers and myself in Manteca some years ago, Scott Speed. He was runner-up in Red Bull's search for American in Formula One. He crossed the pond as the number one in the search, AJ Allmendinger, decided not to race in Europe. As a Red Bull Junior in Europe, Scott lived up to his name and won the very competitive Formula Renault Euro Cup and the German version also, which was very impressive. He then moved up to the inaugural season of GP2, where he was competitive and raced against the likes of Nico Rosberg and Heikki Kovalainen. Scott did not win a race, but finished third in the championship with 67.5 points, compared to 120 of championship winner Nico Rosberg. When he made his Grand Prix debut with Toro Rosso in 2006, he became the first American since Michael Andretti in 1993 to race in Formula One. Scott was shoved out of Formula One, literally and figuratively, after a physical altercation with Franz Tost following the 2007 European Grand Prix at Nürburgring. This is the race where El Machismo pushed and shoved Felipe Massa late in the race to take an amazing victory, and in Parc Fermé told Felipe, "Baby, you don't hit my car." And the argument continued in the green room before podium ceremonies. Do you remember this incident, sir, with Fernando and Felipe?
I remember all incidents with Fernando.
Very good. Except for the 2007 season, excusez-moi.
Hi, I'm Felipe Massa. You are listening to F1 Weekly.
Is the caller there?
Si.
Okay. Next we come to Vittorio Liuzzi. His karting success promised a stellar single-seater career. He won the 2001 World Karting Championship, famously beating Michael Schumacher at his home track in Kirpin. Liuzzi was 2004 Formula 3000 champion, winning 7 of the 10 races, started 9 of them from pole position. I remember I was at the San Marino Grand Prix in 2004 where he was racing, and he was really, really making a big name for himself. He made his Formula 1 debut in 2005, sharing the car with Christian Klien. Liuzzi scored a point on his debut at Imola. He did 3 more races. Rest of the races, Christian Klien drove the car. In 2006, he did the entire season, but again scored only 1 point, this time at the US Grand Prix. In 2007, Liuzzi's only point-scoring finish came in the Chinese Grand Prix, and towards the end of the season, he was given the chop-chop by Chefmeister Marco. Today, Vittorio Liuzzi is angry and bitter that Red Bull encouraged him to portray his party image when they brought him into Formula One. And according to him, in an interview I saw on YouTube, they wanted him to continue with that because they were marketing to young crowd. And according to him, later used that as an excuse to clip his wings, saying he was not serious and committed to the program. As they say in a song from the Eagles, every form of refuge has its price. Next, we come to the Francais version of Liuzzi, your man Sébastien Bourdais. The French driver from Le Mans has made a great career here in the United States in IndyCars. Before crossing the pond, things may have been very different for him had he agreed to a management contract from Flavio Briatore. Like Zanardi before him, Sebas was hoping to transfer his winning spree from one series to another. He was taken on by Nicolas Todd as a client, and they entered the Pamplona of motorsports, the Red Bull Ring, where law of the jungle applies, kill or be killed. Like Rubinho at Braun, he had difficulty in adjusting to the car. Sadly, Dr. Marco at Red Bull has much less patience and kindness than Ross Braun. Bourdais was in the points on his Grand Prix debut in Australia in 2008. He was classified 17th in the championship with 4 points. The following seasons, he had 2 points after the German Grand Prix when Dr. Marco gave him the Achtung and marching orders. It must be said that in the famous Vuelta 2008 Italian Grand Prix, where Sebastian Vettel won for the first time from pole position, Bourdais had qualified 4th, but was still almost a second behind Seb's time. Next, another Francais, victim of Dr. Strangelove, Jean-Éric Vannes. Jeff came through the French racing system. With Red Bull, he dominated the 2010 British Formula 3 and won all 3 races at the Spa round, which is, of course, very impressive. Some years later, another young talent would accomplish the same feat at Spa in the European Formula 3 Championship, and that driver was Max Verstappen. Surprise, surprise. From 2012 to 2014, Jean-Éric Vannes raced in Formula 1 with Toro Rosso. He would qualify well, but teammate Ricciardo would do better on race day. Jeff's best finish in the championship was 13th in 2014. Life after F1 has been electrifying for Jean-Éric. He is a back-to-back Formula E champion. Next, sir, Brendan Hartley. In his younger days as a Red Bull junior, Hartley was a Tom Petty lookalike, but his future at Red Bull was free-falling from the moment they put him in British F3 as teammate to Carlos Sainz Jr. He made it as their reserve driver in Formula 1, but was then dropped from the program. Success came to him in sports car racing with Porsche as teammate to another graduate of Dr. Marco's School of High Performance, Mark Weber. Here is Brendan phoned Dr. Marco, telling him he is a changed person. Vacancy was available at Toro Rosso, and amazingly, Red Bull brought him back. Changed person he may have been, but the performance remained the same. He was unable to match his teammate Pierre Gasly. No one was surprised when he was released. Quick look at some of the victims of Dr. Marco's strange love.
So many victims, so little time.
Yes, you know, but one thing one has to understand is Red Bull, they do give you an opportunity to fly. I mean, you know, like this kid from Mexico, Patricio O'Ward, he has been doing extremely well in IndyCar racing or Indy Lights, and was very impressive when he made his IndyCar debut. And there was always talk of, you know, he won't be able to do a full season in IndyCar's championship. And then he gets the call from Red Bull / Dr. Marco. Now they have put him in Super Formula and given him some races in F2. So they do give you the opportunity. You have to take the Red Bull by the horn and do what Seb did or Max is doing or Daniel Ricciardo did. So there is room in place there for the top performers. But there is very little patience, that's for sure.
And I don't expect them to be patient. I want them to be machismo, and therefore it's entertaining as well.
I mean, look at the opportunity they're giving to Alexander Albon. This guy, you know, last year when he was in Formula 2 and did a very good job, apparently, these are his own words, that he begged the team owner, Jean-Paul Drieu, who just passed away, who owned the team Dams. He basically had very little money and begged him for a ride, did a very good job, has done a very impressive job this year in Formula 1 so far. And, you know, before the season, he had never even tested a Formula 1 car. A lot of these drivers at least get to do, you know, young driver test days and all that kind of stuff. So I wish him all the best. But the problem is, no matter who you are, trying to go and beat Max is almost impossible.
Almost.
Yeah, I say almost for, you know, young drivers. I mean, if you put Sebastian or Lewis, they can run with him and maybe beat him every now and then. But for young kids coming through the system, it's almost impossible.
Almost.
And, you know, Max is one of those, you know, it's like the Senna's and the Schumachers. They are like rolling like a bullet train. They're not going to slow down to help their drivers, their teammates. And that's not what motor racing is about anyway. It's like, you know, I always think of racing drivers as fighter pilots, you know. They are there to shoot down the other guy and not to help him land or bail out safely. You know what I'm saying?
I just do know what you're saying.
So looking forward to the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps. Very, very excited. I do miss the bus stop. And I don't know about the weather forecast. Is any rain in the news for Spa this weekend?
I haven't looked, Nass. I'm a busy guy.
That you are.
So keep up the good work, Nass. I also want to thank again McLaren for allowing the Mika Hakkinen interview.
Yes, sir. My special thanks to them. It was very nice. And, you know, hopefully we will have some more interviews if and when I make it to the final race in Abu Dhabi in late November, December.
Fantastic, Nats. Keep up the good work. An outstanding job. It was nice seeing you at Laguna Seca.
Talking of Laguna Seca, are you going to the IndyCar finale? Or are you going to the Hanford Truck Racing Series?
Exactly. Greg Biffle is going to be driving, so it's a toss-up.
I want to ask you a question. Have you ever been to the Watsonville Speedway where they do dirt races?
No, sir.
Man, I've been there once and I saw figure eight racing. It was very, very exciting. I kid you not.
I know, but I'm going to stick to more professional racing, Nasser.
Okay, sir.
Keep up the good work. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Elio Castroneves, four-time Indy 500 champion, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
And now let's go right to the wrap-up. San Francisco Formula One group. They meet, they drink, and they have a great time during the Formula One season. Check them out at sff1.com. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact CameronCarting.com.